Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how you doing?
I'm feeling like a little baseball. How about you guys?
I agree. Yes, and Matt is correct. He said guys, because we are joined by our very special guest, Kieran Chiak. How you doing, Kieran?
Nice to be here. I'm looking forward to some talking softball.
Yes, Kieran is, I know him from both the Have a Nice Day podcast and Journey into Misery. They're both excellent podcasts. You guys should check them out. He's also putting together a Simpsons zine, which I will be contributing to, which is how I learned, learned that he was a big Simpsons fan. Before we get into this week's episode, Kieran, talk a little bit about your history with The Simpsons. How long have you been a fan?
Since I was about 9 or 10, so 2000-ish. Maybe a little bit earlier. I wasn't allowed to watch it for a long time. My mum really, really doesn't like it. So she really didn't want me to watch it. But then I went on to my nan's once and she had a tape for me. And this will pinpoint about where it was, because it had the New York episode, Homer Simpson versus New York. It had an episode of Family Guy and an episode of the PJs on like a VHS tape that she taped from the telly. So without my mum's knowledge, I watched those three episodes on repeat. And then I just kind of started, like, I think my mum realised I was old enough to watch The Simpsons. And I remember watching Summer of 4'2", the Lisa Simpson Gets Cool episode. I think I had that on like a VHS tape. I watched that one a lot. And then I just really fell into it. And I had all the episode guides and kind of went out of my way to make sure I watched every episode. I remember when the 300th episode was coming up, I was really desperate to have watched the previous 299, every single one of them, before 300 came in, and I did it, which was hard back then.
You just
had to hope that they were on, pretty much.
I was going to say, like, that's some dedication, getting to 299 before the 300.
It's kind of a mythic slot from, like, my childhood in England of this BBC Two 6 PM Simpsons and Fresh Prince. So like everyone watched BBC Two at 6 till Simpsons and then Fresh Prince. And then when they kept it on at 6, but it was never quite the same.
Awesome. So with no further ado, this week's episode, Homer at the Bat, episode 8F13, originally aired February 20th, 1992. Written by John Swartzwelder, directed by Jim Reardon. Famously, this is the first episode that beat the show that will not be named in the ratings, The Cosby Show.
I'm not entirely sure I know what that is. Oh, okay.
We just recently started doing that just because all that Cosby awful nonsense.
We didn't have that, as far as I'm aware. Like, he who shall not be like a figure of any note in England.
Hmm. All the better for that.
Yeah, now especially. This is the first time they beat The Cosby Show. They had a 13.2 rating. I think they won the time slot. This is the first time it did that. It beat the Olympics as well. So tons of backstory in this episode. Deadspin recently wrote an article that I'm going to post on all our social media along with this episode, because it's excellent stories and writing about the episode as a whole. I'd totally suggest everyone to read that. This is Al Jean's and Sam Simon's, rest in peace, favorite episode. Both Harry Shearer and Julie Kavner dislike it, at least at the time.
I remember reading really something weird about that.
Yeah, I don't understand. The reasons I read is because it focused so much on the guest stars, and it wasn't like, it was very surreal. Like, it's more out there than most of the previous episodes so far. But when you compare it, well, most people say this is like the start of the golden age, even though I think as we've gone through, we've kind of established that even maybe middle of the second season, they really start hitting their stride. But chalkboard gag, I will not aim for the head. Which,
it's always quality advice.
It depends what you're aiming. Couch gag, family knocks itself unconscious. Maggie gets to the couch unscathed. It's fine. Guest stars. We have Roger Clemens, Wade Boggs, Ken Griffey Jr., Steve Sachs, Ozzie Smith, Jose Canseco, Don Mattingly, Daryl Strawberry, Mike Socha, and Terry Cashman, who sings Talking Softball, the alternate version of his own song, Talking Baseball.
Oh, that makes sense.
You didn't know that, Matt?
I was wondering who that was. I was like, oh, it's just a great song.
No, that's a lot of people don't know that he has the, like, Simpsons fans especially often ask him to sing this song, not knowing that he had a talking baseball song that was like the precursor. Before I get into the events of this episode, Kieran, when I asked you to be on the show, you purposely picked out this one, and I'm just curious why. I mean, it's a very good episode, no doubt about it. It just seems like it's a very kind of American episode because it's about baseball and has all these baseball players. Does it translate to England?
Yeah, I think it translates. Just the idea of sport, like not much, like it doesn't really go into the rules of baseball that great. There's this stuff about the only thing I can think of that I don't really understand is how they win, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Like how what happens? Do I need to like avoid that as a spoiler? Like when Homer gets hit in the head,
no,
and it counts as a hit. I don't really understand how that counts as a hit, but.
That's a point of contention.
That kind of surrealness?
On the, we talk about the old message boards, the old news groups that were up when the show was originally airing, and they actually talk a lot about the rules of softball, so we'll get into that a little bit later on. But I'm just curious, because I know, like, baseball's not really much of an English sport, so.
No, we have rounders, which is very similar to softball. It's, like, rounders is pretty much softball, as far as I'm aware, but we use a cricket bat. So there's like the four bases, and you run around. It's a child's game as well. Like adults don't really play rounders. It's like a game you play in school, like in. So I think it's fairly obvious to go, oh, that's just round. That's what Americans call rounders.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's interesting because softball is pretty much played exclusively by adults and young women.
Yeah, the reason why I chose this one was mostly because you said what episode you're up to. So I had a look down like what was coming up in the next few weeks. Yeah. And I spotted this one. And I think this is possibly my second favorite episode.
Really?
Just, like you said, the surreal humor and the events, what happens to the players, and the escalation of how weird those events are, kind of culminating with Ozzie Smith.
Yes, the Springfield mystery spot. Oh, what was I going to say? I just had a thought and it just vanished. What's your favorite?
You Only Move Twice.
That's my second favorite. So yeah, it's a great one.
Three is probably Homer's Enemy.
That's my favorite. That is my favorite.
If you want to have me back on for those ones, I'll happily come back.
Yes. Well, we pretty much have an open door policy for people once they've appeared. So you're welcome pretty much anytime.
I'll talk about Simpsons every opportunity.
Let's see. Get into this, the events of the episode. The episode begins with Homer choking on a donut. I only mention this because apparently the Heimlich maneuver poster that is very evident on the wall there actually has saved multiple people's lives in real life.
Of course it has.
There's multiple people who have said, oh, I saw that poster on The Simpsons, and it reminded me how to give the Heimlich maneuver to people. So multiple choking people.
I know. I often choke on whole lobsters.
Yes, you gotta the meat. Get the meat, Matt. Not the shell. You want to get the meat out of the shell. That's the secret to eating lobster.
Or you can just shove the whole thing down your throat like a duck and pray.
we're already getting back to Homer's Enemy again. But Homer wants to play softball. The rest of the guys were kind of reticent to sign up because they generally are terrible. But they don't know what he has a secret weapon, which is a Wonder Bat, which he goes into the entire origin story with Bart.
Can I talk about the start of the episode for a second?
Yeah, absolutely. Just break in whenever you feel like it, Kieran.
I really like how quick this episode is to start, because one of my big complaints on Simpsons over the years is how it's just part of the format of the show now, that the first 10 minutes will be something completely unrelated that eventually winds down to produce the plot of the episode. And it gets quite frustrating that when you recognise that that's what they're doing. So the fact that this episode is just Homer's choking, Lenny sees the softball thing, softball. I really, really like that.
No, it's
The same with You Only Move. It starts with Smithers being offered a job. Smithers says no. Homer gets offered the job. We're moving.
Yeah, that's we. You'll be here for when we rank the episodes. That's one of our considerations. Actually, is how tight an episode is. Like, does it meander a while, or does it get straight to the point? And we definitely weigh favorably with episodes that are straight to the point, to the plot. They don't, you know, go back and forth about, you know, something that doesn't mean anything necessarily to the greater plot as a whole.
I think if you've got a good premise, then I want to watch as much of that premise as possible. So I feel as the fact that they take 5-10 minutes to get to what is the A story of the show, just, okay, so how strong is that premise? We need this 5-10 minutes before it.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. But Bart is awestruck by Wonderbat, and Homer explains how he made it.
Come here, boy. I want to show you something.
What's that? A homemade bat?
It's something very special. A homemade bat. It all started last year during a terrible thunderstorm. I locked myself out of the house. Sheltering myself with a large piece of sheet metal, I ran for cover under the tallest tree I could find. Something told me this was a very special, very magical piece of wood that I could make a bat out of. I put my homemade football on hold and set to work making the world's greatest bat.
Homie, come to bed. Homer, go back to the garage.
And here it is.
Wow, how many home runs you gonna hit with that?
Let's see, we play 30 games, 10 at-bats a game, 3,000.
I love that particular clip for two very specific reasons. One, Homer's homemade football, which is just a fantastic-looking football. And two, Homer's complete lack of ability to do math. 10 times 30 is absolutely 3,000.
Mm-hmm. That's the best.
I think Dan Castellaneta's delivery is just peak Homer. With the reach shift from, that I can make a bat out of. It's so Homer.
Dan Castellaneta's performance in this is really stellar, especially considering the fact that I don't think he was actually present for a lot of his scenes with the baseball players. Because they had to record them over, you know, months and months as they came through LA. So I think that's even more impressive. The fact that I'm not sure. He has only in like shades of Daryl Strawberry. I'm not sure. Maybe they managed to get him in there with Daryl. But because he has the Wonder Bat, the rest of the guys at the plant are more willing to sign up. You know, they're excited. They play their first game, which is against the police, the Springfield police team. They explain the rules before the game. This is, I guess, might be even more confusing for you, Karen.
Okay, let's go over the ground rules. You can't leave first until you chug a beer. Any man scoring has to chug a beer. You have to chug a beer at the top of all odd-numbered innings. Oh, and the fourth inning is the beer inning.
Hey, we know how to play softball.
Beer. My dad did play softball for a while at this kind of level, and yes, that much beer is involved.
I was going to say, I hope they have a really good beer sponsor.
Although my dad's softball team won championships. They had a very good team.
Did your dad have a Wonder Bat?
No, he had a normal bat. Oh. But he did have lots of gnarly injuries that he was happy to show off.
Well, softball is one of those sports where you get horrifically injured all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of gags in this first act, especially involving the police. You know, they're ignoring robberies and shooting their guns off in the air. But the game ends with Homer going up to bat with the bases loaded, and he ends up hitting a home run and winning the game, walk off home run. And the it's a great visual gag. Unfortunately, Clip won't really do it justice, but the slow motion replay of Homer's home run is spectacular. His little glimpse of surprise is what really sets it off for me.
Yeah, I really like episodes where Homer gets to be like genuinely competent at something. Like, you get stuff like Mom and Pop Art, where he's actually an amazing artist and he doesn't really know what he's doing. And there's a lot of episodes like that. But episodes where Homer is actually good at something despite everyone expecting it. The few and far between, but I think it makes it special that they are few and far between.
No, that's... We recently... I mean, relatively recently, we did Homer Defined, where, you know, he saves the plant from the meltdown. And that's, like, we as we were watching it, we kind of figured out that that's, like, the blueprint for that type of episode, where Homer succeeds despite himself. And, yeah, it's one of my... That's one of my favorites. But that's... The softball team goes on a winning streak. This is... We have not mentioned yet, but a lot of this baseball stuff is all references to both Pride of the Yankees and The Natural, both films from, well, Natural was, I believe, 80s, and the Pride of the Yankees was way back in the 40s, so I've never actually seen Pride of the Yankees. But they go on a winning streak, they end up undefeated, and they end up going to the championship game, which is against Shelbyville, and we get a return appearance of Aristotle Amadopoulos. I think I said that right.
Indeed you did. Good old John Lovitz.
It's not John Lovitz this time, though, Matt.
I know. I'm sad.
It's Dan Castellaneta doing... I don't think he really tries to do John Lovitz. He just does kind of a rich Greek guy's voice and not necessarily John Lovitz's version, I guess, of this guy. But they make they are at Millionaire's Club. Great touch. And they make a wager.
Can I go back to one thing that I think we really need to point out? That's
what? Sure,
an amazing
ahead.
Bit. From when they're touring and they're doing really well, the bit where it shows everyone, like Lenny and Carl, and everyone has their own magic bat.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
And they've got, like, someone has a piano leg, someone has his sister's wooden leg. It's a really, really great scene of, like, Homer kind of inspiring people. And I also really love the bit where I like it when you see the kids look up to Homer. So they're arguing over who's going to get him a beer. So Homer just goes, kids, you can each get me a beer. And I love how it's not, you can both get me a beer. It's very specifically, I really like those two moments.
Yeah, it's they're great. And I'm not sure if it's necessarily directly from this, but that moment where they all have the different, you know, bats. There is actually a baseball game in the 90s with Nolan Ryan, a very famous Hall of Famer pitcher. He ended up pitching a no-hitter, and one of the guys on the opposite team, as a joke, just came up with a table leg. Because they knew it, like, he was so good that day, they're like, I have no chance. I'm just gonna, you know, have some fun. And so they say that's a reference to that. I'm dubious, but that I do. It's a good anecdote, regardless. The admiration that Bart and Lisa have for Homer kind of bleeds into the rest of the episode. But the Burns and Aristotle Amadopoulos make a $1 million wager for the championship game between Shelbyville and Springfield. And with that, we go to commercial.
And then we come back.
Just the joke there of where Aristotle says $1 million and Mr. Burns just goes, why don't we make it interesting? And not hearing how much Aristotle offered. It's just like peak Mr. Burns.
I almost pulled that clip. I probably should have.
Usually when you're doing $1 million bets, you're kind of paying attention, but apparently Mr. Burns doesn't believe in that. But when we come back from commercial, we see Mr. Burns and Smithers plotting on how they're going to win this game.
Smithers, I've been thinking, is it wrong to cheat in order to win a $1 million bet?
Yeah, sir.
Let me rephrase that. Is it wrong if I cheat in order to win a $1 million bet?
No, sir. Who would you like killed?
So we immediately see that Burns is going all out here.
Strawberry. Yes.
You play right.
Oops. Misfire.
So, of course, Mr. Burns is happy to cheat, and he wants to recruit professional baseballers. Unfortunately, most of the ones he knows are long since dead. Honus Wagner, Cap Anson, Mordecai Three-Finger Brown, and apparently a unnamed right fielder who's been dead for 130 years. Or was it left fielder? I can't remember.
I believe that is, I think it was the left fielder, but his name is Jim Creighton. He died.
So if he was dead for 130 years at that point, he would have died in what, the 1880s?
He died in 1862.
Holy crap. You're right. That's even more.
Was
baseball a thing in 1862?
Well, of a sort. Baseball has existed in many ways in a weird version of itself for a long time. He let's see. I have it right here. This is from that Deadspin article. Creighton was the pitcher, excuse me. He was not the left fielder, but he did die in 1862 at the ripe old age of 21.
Jesus.
He did not strike out once while batting during the 20 games of the 1860 season.
Wow.
You can see why Mr. Burns would want him.
That's true. He has a hell of a record, apparently, when you look at the percentages. Luckily, Smithers apparently knows who the prominent baseballers are. Of course, he's only given 24 hours to Mr. Burns. But luckily, apparently, Smithers is a time traveler because he manages to recruit several of the best players. He starts out with Jose Canseco, who's apparently taking a pay cut for $50,000 to play one game. He was definitely at his, let's say, muscly peak that may or may not have been performance enhanced at this point.
No, it was definitely, but Matt Canseco was definitely on steroids. That is not up for debate. He has admitted it. On steroids.
I just wasn't sure the time frame of when he was on steroids. This might have been before that.
No, he was. Know. I'm fairly confident.
Okay, good. So,
Jose Canseco, he's the only one that kind of I'm aware of outside of this episode, and that's just because of his bonkers Twitter antics.
Also true.
Yeah, he was also most infamously the one who had the most complaints about the script and made them change it, which I guess we'll get into when we get to that part. But
interesting.
He was the most troublesome one behind the scenes, which is not too crazy because he is a psychopath.
That is also true. I want to know more about Mike Socha because honestly, I didn't pay much attention to baseball in the 90s, but they portray him as like the nicest guy ever. You know, he almost shoots Smithers and Smithers is like, oh, whatever, you know, it's not a big deal. And he wants to be a blue collar worker, which is a little weird for a baseball player, but you know, everyone has what they want.
I can give you a little, Mike Socha was a good catcher. I wouldn't say he's a great one. He was an all-star twice. But he's probably even more famous at this point because he won several championships as a manager, for the Angels long after he stopped playing. But that's where I mainly knew him from because I was watching baseball. I wasn't really cognizant of baseball as a whole until when he was managing.
Fair enough. Smithers managed to track down Ozzie Smith in Graceland, touring Elvis's mansion, because apparently that's what Ozzie Smith does, is tour famous landmarks, I guess. he goes to Don Mattingly's house, where he is scrubbing the dishes, a portrayal I don't think Don Mattingly was too favorable of, but hey,
I think he complained about it, but, he didn't go as far as Canseco did.
Mattingly strikes me as a manly man, so I assume he took offense to that, but you never know.
That's the joke. That's the joke. You know, it's a place against
type.
I know.
Yeah. Steve Sax is playing in a jazz band, which if he's actually in a jazz band, that would be amazing, but I don't know for sure.
Steve Sax's story is kind of the most interesting one to me because he, of all these players, is probably the worst one. He was a fine baseball player, but that he actually is kind of grateful for this episode because it distracted from some on-field problems. Like he wasn't playing very well. And then as soon as this episode came out, everyone liked him again. It didn't matter what he was doing on the field.
Well, that's good. You know, it helps him transition to a new career, probably, as a jazz musician or an actor, maybe. we then cut to Mr. Burns introducing the new plant employees as lunchroom cashiers, security guards, manual labor, et cetera, et cetera. And he says, we'll make up jobs for these fellas later, and then introduces all of the players. And, of course, immediately he recommends they join up for the softball team, which, of course, the current softball players are like, hey, wait a minute, this is going to completely screw us over. But Burns says, oh, well, I won't play any favorites, wink. And, of course, as they're all signing up, as I'm sure was required by their contract and large cash payments, Homer meets Daryl Strawberry.
You're Daryl Strawberry.
Yes.
You play right field.
Yes.
I play right field, too.
So?
Well, are you better than me?
Well, I never met you, but yes.
I'm pretty sure if you go to any professional baseball player and ask, hey, are you better at baseball than me? They're within their prerogative to say, yes, I do this for a living. I'm definitely better than you. So, sorry, Homer.
There's a great bit as well where Mike Socha just goes to head to work and avoid the sign up. And Mr. Burns says, one more outburst like that and I'll send you back to the big leagues.
I'm sure for Socia that was, I heard Socia's character, that was quite the punishment.
Oh, where?
Of course.
Oh, I was just going to say, a journalist for the Toronto Star named that conversation with Daryl Strawberry as the greatest conversation of all time involving the word yes.
I can see that. I'm surprised Strawberry was able to actually get that much of a conversation out. Because weren't the early 90s when he was on his heavily on cocaine phase?
No, that was a little bit after this. It was a little bit when he was when he fell into that. This is right at the end of his kind of before it kind of he fell into drug addiction. I'm fairly certain.
Okay. Homer then goes home and starts complaining to his family about how he's not going to get to play anymore. And of course, Bart pipes up and says, "You told me I could win if I did if I just worked hard at it." And of course, Homer says, "Oh, that's a now that you're a little older, I can tell you that's a crock of crap. There's no matter how good you are at something, there'll be a million people who are better than you." And Bart, rather than being disappointed, says, "Oh, gotcha, can't win, don't try." Fair enough.
Oh, so good.
My girlfriend was like, a valuable lesson. My girlfriend's like making some food. Just in the background while I was watching this, and I just heard her go, "Same." if anyone listening has listened to the podcast I do with my girlfriend, that's very in character for her.
Yeah,
nice.
I want to particularly say you guys do a great job.
Cheers. We're having a lot of fun.
We then cut to Mr. Burns talking to all of the players, the ringers and the standard players, and saying, "Oh, you know, none of you are guaranteed a spot on this team." And then it calls out Homer at the end as one of the bad players by name, because, you know, of course, Homer is too stupid to get that. Burns is apparently taking a much more active role in coaching from now on. So he immediately starts giving them a brain and nerve tonic, which, you know, I'm sure that wasn't. That was medically sound, you know, chemical of some sort. But luckily we have, of course, King Griffey Jr. rather enjoys the taste.
Wow. It's like there's a party in my mouth and everyone's invited. Excellent.
Sorry. I just had to include that because of Moe's line in Flaming Moe's of the exact same thing. So
apparently at the time, King Griffey Jr. was, I loved King Griffey Jr. as a kid. He was my favorite baseball player. Like, it's not even close. Like, I have all his rookie cards, and I have his signature and all that. So I was, as a little tiny Robbie, was particularly in love with this episode just because Ken Griffey Jr. was in it.
Aww.
Even though apparently he had a lot of trouble with his lines. He had his father was with him and apparently coached him through the lines.
Maybe he was just really nervous, you know? Being on The Simpsons is a big deal.
I don't know.
Anyway, Mr. Burns gives them an old-fashioned type of training with medicine balls and punching bags and old-school steamers that enclose your entire body except for your head, which sounds terrifying to me, but I'm sure someone would enjoy that. And luckily, he also employs a hypnotist, which will eventually come back to bite them in the butt, but at first, you know, works out pretty well.
You are all very good players.
We are all very good players.
You will beat Shelbyville.
We will beat Shelbyville.
You will give 110%.
That's impossible. No one can give more than 100%. By definition, that is the most anyone can give.
So there you go, every sports person ever. You can't give more than 100%. Screw you.
That's such a smart joke, too. It's really, really clever writing that manages to both play on the hip.
Clemens, did I make the team?
Sorry.
But Matt, you're just firing off clips at a rapid pace.
The mouse flicks accidentally sometimes. It's an old mouse.
We'll invest in a new mouse for you, Matt. How about that? We can write that off on your taxes next year. What was I saying? Oh, just yeah. It puts a spin on both the hypnotism of the truth telling and the fact of the sports player trope of how much percentage they're giving. This whole episode really. I think that's why people like it so much, because it really doesn't take itself too seriously on about the sports.
Which is unusual, because most of the time when you have something sports related in a sitcom, they try and do it super serious and end up, you know, just being stupid. Although the next scene where Bart and Ralph are apparently playing a pickup game of baseball in the park, and somehow Ralph ends up with all the professional players, is great. And my wife died laughing when she saw that, because she's a big Ralph fan.
You're very happy.
My wife.
My wife. Sorry. The comedy Bang Bang in me makes me do that. Sorry.
Of course. Of course. It's okay. She likes me when I call her that, since we just got married.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So then we go to another practice where Mr. Burns is already starting to rail on Don Mattingly about his sideburns, who, and Mattingly is appropriately confused because he's like, what sideburns? And Burns says the greatest line ever, you heard me, hippie.
That's my favorite. This running joke is my favorite of the episode.
Oh, it's so great.
I think it's really formative of my sense of humor. Like, it's a real, like, surreal, like, almost anti-humor in, like, a kind of comedy Bang Bang way. I think that's why, you can kind of trace all the stuff I find funny back to kind of that joke.
Yes, get rid of those sideburns that don't exist. And the strangest thing is, because right after Mattingly recorded this episode, like maybe 2 weeks after this, there's a huge dust-up with him and his manager and because his hair was unkempt, like they were angry at him because his hair was messy, and it really wasn't that bad, and people thought that this was, you know, making reference to that, when in actuality they wrote this before that ever happened.
It's so funny, because to think of those managers in baseball today, they would have a conniption at how many people have horrible beards and really long hair. They'd die.
It's different. Even still, I think still to today, the Yankees do not allow facial hair.
That is the weirdest thing ever.
It's the Yankees. They're that's their thing. They have the history and the clean cut, you know, pinstripes. It's their image. They can't, it's a part of the deal. So that's.
I'm sure it vastly helps in them winning, the lack of facial hair.
They do have a lot of World Series.
Fair enough. Maybe that's the secret. No more facial hair. I'm going to go shave all mine off. But anyway, the practice continues, and Homer is like, oh, you know, these guys can't beat me. I've got Wonder Bat. And Roger Clemens immediately throws a flaming fastball into Wonder Bat and breaks it in half. So Homer's one advantage is long since gone.
Oh, poor Homer.
Yeah, he gets screwed. And then, of course, at the end of the day, everyone takes a knee, and Burns gives them an inspirational speech about the most important games of their lives, which is totally true for the Ringers. That one game, that softball game, is the most important game of their lives, for sure. And then posts the starting lineup, and poor Homer just, well.
Clemens, did I make the team?
You sure did.
I did! Woohoo! Strawberry.
Wait a minute. Are you Ken Griffey Jr.?
No.
Sorry. Didn't mean to get your hopes up.
Yes, because Homer looks a lot like Ken Griffey Jr. Or by the end of the episode, kind of a little bit.
Yeah.
Actually, gigantism kicks in.
I think it's one thing that I kind of go back and forth on whether I like or I'd change. That Daryl Strawberry is a bit of a suck up to Mr. Burns. He's always like, no hustle either, Skip. He's very much like sucking up to Mr. Burns, where there's part of me that think it'd be funnier if, like, Homer had no, like, there was no reason for Homer to dislike Daryl other than he's a better player than him. I'm not going to tell the Simpsons writers how to do their jobs, obviously, but it seems kind of out of place with what they want to accomplish with having him in his place.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. And we certainly often try and tell the Simpsons writers how to do their job. So we're not. I'm not going to disparage that. I think it does kind of. I guess it's just to give Homer some sort of antagonist, not himself. I think that's how its very basic function is. Like to have him have someone to try and be against instead of just the situation. To be fair, Daryl Strawberry does do a very good job in with his performance. All the guest guys, just professional athletes, they do a pretty good job.
They really do, because it feels like not a lot of them have long speeches, but I think, like you said, Strawberry especially just kind of, he has the exact tone that he is supposed to, or I assume that he was supposed to, and it really makes you feel like his character is the kind of person they're trying to portray rather than whoever Daryl Strawberry was in real life.
Yeah, you can tell it was directed well. really, really well.
Yeah.
Yep. After Homer finds out he is not on the team, we fade to black.
So we get a second act with Homer being sad? Ending with Homer being sad?
We do! Yes! That's on the checklist.
We've noticed a particular trend, Kieran, of many, many second acts of The Simpsons ends with Homer being sad. A lot of them in this season, especially. We had four or five, Matt. How many was it? Four?
I believe this is four, yeah.
It was four in a row where the second act ended with Homer being sad. See, when we come back, we have, this is, as Kieran mentioned earlier, a just amazing sequence of almost every member of the, cat drama over here, every member of the, of the softball team, every ringer getting some sort of awful accident happening to them. Burns does a great foreshadowing joke right at the beginning.
Smithers, there's no way I can lose this bet.
Unless, of course, my 9 All-Stars fall victim to 9 separate misfortunes and are unable to play tomorrow. But that will never happen. 3 misfortunes, that's possible. 7 misfortunes, there's an outside chance. But 9 misfortunes, I'd like to see that.
And that mostly comes, I guess Burns is right in that there aren't 9 misfortunes. That Strawberry makes it through the episode unhurt.
True, and he's the one who fires Mattingly, so really it's only 7.
Yeah, that's exactly, it all comes true. Steve Sachs is arrested and charged with every crime that's ever been committed in New York City, every unsolved New York crime.
Well, if you have to blame somebody, Steve Sachs is a good scapegoat. I mean, come on.
Oh, poor Steve Sachs.
can I try something here?
Yeah.
I watched it a few hours ago. I want to try and, like, roll off what happens to everyone without looking.
Okay.
Okay, so if you name the player, and I'll tell you what happens to them.
Okay, we already gone Steve Sachs. So Mike Socha.
Mike Socha gets radiation poisoning and will barely be able to breathe the next day.
His reaction is the best.
Man.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Ken Griffey Jr., that's in the same scene because he has contracted gigantism from the nerve tonic.
Poor Ken Griffey. We have Jose Canseco, everyone's favorite.
This is one of the best. He's driving by or walking by and there's a house fire. He runs in to save the baby. Then he gets the cat. Then he gets to play a piano. And I laughed. I think on this rewatch, that was the hardest I laughed. oh no, my player piano! And you just hear, like, the jaunty piano. And then later you see him when Mr. Burns is like, what's happening to him? And he's getting everything out of the house and the woman is like, no, the dryer goes on the left.
We have Don Mattingly.
Don Mattingly gets fired for... Well, Mr. Burns tells him to shave his sideburns again, and he doesn't know what he's talking about. So the next time you see him, he's just shaved, like, straight across his head from where his sideburn would be, straight over to where the other sideburn would be. So he just has, like, a tuft at the front and kind of a mullet at the back.
And
he gets fired for that.
And he still likes him better than Steinbrenner.
See, I only really get that from Seinfeld.
Yeah,
if it wasn't for Seinfeld, I wouldn't get that joke, I don't think.
That's the ref. Yeah, a lot of. I was thinking about that as I was watching them. Like, Seinfeld really made Steinbrenner more of a personality than. If you follow baseball, you know, he was a good owner, but he's also a lunatic. He's passed on. Now his sons run the team. Wade Boggs.
Wade Boggs gets in an argument with Barney over who the best English Prime Minister was. Wade Boggs says it was Pitt the Elder. Barney says it's Lord Palmerstone. And I hope you have the clip for this. I don't know if you do.
I do.
You can play that.
England's greatest Prime Minister was Lord Palmerston.
Pitt the Elder.
Lord Palmerston!
Pitt the Elder!
Okay, you asked for it, Boggs!
Yeah, that's showing him, Bonnie. Pitt the Elder.
Lord Palmerston!
To be fair, Boggs was right. It is William Pitt. I mean, come on. Seriously?
I actually have friends who argue over Gladstone v. Disraeli. And, you know, like, whenever they start the argument, me and another friend will just start arguing over Pitt the Elder and Lord Palmerston.
Oh, it's so good. We have Ozzie Smith.
Ozzie Smith goes to, was it Springfield's Mystery Spot, I believe?
Yeah.
And he asks how long it's going to be. And the guy, who is pretty much just the surly-voiced guy, he's had many different appearances, but it's always the same voice. And he says, well, once he goes out, once he goes in, he might never come out. And Ozzie Smith's reaction is, I believe, neat. And he walks in and immediately vanishes off the face of the earth into a weird floating dimension.
I do like the fact that he paused while he's floating in mysteries in the mystery spot. He pauses to take a picture of the E equals MC squared floating by. Let's see. Roger Clemens
has been tragically hypnotized to think he is a chicken. So Mr. Burns goes to shout at the hypnotist, who hypnotizes him into thinking he's done a good job.
And Clemens actually did the bok bok. He actually did the chicken sounds himself. So
that is fantastic.
A lot of people have given Clemens a lot of crap later in his career, mostly for the, you know, questions about performance enhancing drugs. Others about the fact that he changes teams all the time. But I have to always cut him a break because he did authentic chicken noises for The Simpsons. So
did you say you had some stuff about Jose Canseco's bits being rewritten?
Yes, he was supposed to. Originally, he was going to have a torrid romance with Miss Krabappel. And he complained about it because he was having trouble with his wife at the time.
Okay.
And she complained, so they changed it so that he looks heroic. I mean, it's still a great bit. That's a credit to the writers that they were able to come up with that, the replacement bit. Another great thing in that Deadspin article, apparently like 2 weeks or a few weeks after this aired, Canseco was arrested after ramming his Porsche into his wife's car at 4 a.m. and then spitting on her window.
Damn.
Yeah. Like I said, Canseco is a lunatic. And right about that time too. Last we have Daryl Strawberry, who made it out unscathed.
He's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. I have the clip pulled of Burns reacting to all this, including the hypnosis bit that Kieran mentioned. It's great.
It's almost game time. Where the devil are my ringers?
Sir, Mike Swisher may not live through the night. Steve Sachs is looking at 6 consecutive life sentences, and Ozzie Smith seems to have vanished off the face of the earth.
Cool. Well, what about Canseco?
The dryer goes on the right.
Yes, ma'am.
What about Clemens?
Sir, he's in no condition to play.
That damn hypnotist! You, look what you've done! My starting pitcher thinks he's a chicken! Make no mistake, I'm going to report this to the American Hypnotical Association.
But I did a good job. A good job.
Oh, well, I guess it's not your fault. You did a good job. Mattingly! I thought I told you to trim those sideburns. Go home. You're off the team for good.
Fine. Still like him better than Steinbrenner.
You know, it kind of makes you think hypnotists rule the world.
We'd never know.
Exactly. So, conspiracy theory.
My girlfriend's dad is actually, I don't think his job is he's a hypnotist, but he does take bookings as a hypnotist.
Really?
Like, not like a show hypnotist, more like this, where it's
therapy, yeah. Hypnotism. That actually has been shown to work in some cases. So I think that's just as interesting as the stage hypnotist. Daryl Strawberry, as we mentioned, is fine. Unfortunately, that means Homer is the only one of the original guys who is on the bench. All the other guys get to play. But Daryl Strawberry, since he's still around, gets to start instead of Homer. Marge, Homer, unfortunately, has Marge, Lisa, and Bart and Maggie at the game. He doesn't want them to be there. He's ashamed. There is a great bit about them, of Marge filming him, and he starts scratching himself. And she has to point the camera down because she doesn't want to capture it. And Bart and Lisa taunt Daryl Strawberry pretty mercilessly. It's hilarious. And then he sheds a single tear.
When I went to King of Trios, which if anyone listening doesn't know, it's a big 3-day wrestling event for the wrestling company Chikara. It was my first time in America. Met a bunch of like my online friends. We booed some of the heels. Well, not so much the heels, but certain good guys who we know to be sexist, misogynist, homophobic pieces of trash real life.
Which are these, Karen? Who was it?
It was Shane Matthews.
Oh, okay. I got it. All right. Yes. You are correct.
I had to reveal that anyway because, well, we jeered Matthews just by going, Matthews, Matthews. He gets really wound up by it.
Well, it works. Aww. It's timeless. They taunt Daryl Strawberry, who, despite that, has hit throughout the most of the game, hits a home run, I think, at every at bat. After Burns takes credit for it, telling him to hit home runs.
I told him to do that.
I told him. But there, it's a, what's it, tie game 43-43 at the bottom of the ninth inning. And Burns takes out Strawberry, citing baseball strategy, which in a normal baseball game, you could look at the splits and the statistics and technically you'd be all right. But this is a softball game and it's Daryl Strawberry. So it's completely crazy. And with that, Homer gets to go up to bat with the bases loaded, the tie game. Burns explains to him all the signals and it's just wonderful.
All right, Simpson, let's go over the signals. If I tuck the bill of my cap like so,
yes,
it means the signal is a fake.
Uh-huh.
However, I can take that off by dusting my hands thusly.
Got it.
If I want you to bunt, I will touch my belt buckle not once, not twice, but thrice. If
I tuck this ear, I don't understand a word he's saying. Why didn't he just let me bat? I wish I was home with a big bag of potato chips. Potato chips.
Got that, Simpson?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's great.
Good stuff.
That's amazing. Homer gets up, is distracted by Burns giving him signals, promptly hit in the head by the pitch, and it brings in the winning run, who they have to push Homer out of the way to cross the plate, which technically all Homer would have to make it to. They would have, well, I guess if he's knocked unconscious, they'd have someone substitute run, so I guess it doesn't matter. But it ends up winning the game. Homer wins despite himself. And then the credits are the aforementioned Talking Softball song, which is great.
Well, there's that picture as well.
Yes.
The team in the various states of tragedy. Yeah. And Ozzie Smith kind of floating at the top, kind of transparent.
Yeah, the
translucent.
The team photo. It's wonderful.
That's been a cover photo of mine on many occasions on Facebook.
Yeah,
it's a good idea.
Matt, you don't have social media, remember?
That's right. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. But yeah, that's the episode. A great one. It's has a great reputation for a reason. It's it's good, but it also, we've mentioned before, like earlier, that the kind of surreal, weird humor is kind of a hint to like a lot of the seasons up to this point. There have been little bits of like weirdness and surrealness. This is the people say this is like the first time they've actually gone full board, whole episode, who cares, just go crazy.
Yeah, I think now they have the success, and like I said, this is the one that kind of won the ratings for that night for the first time. They can just do what they want, and it's so much fun.
Yeah. Matt, what do you say?
I have loved this episode since I was a little kid, mainly because I was forced to play Little League most of elementary school. And
How good were you at Little League, Matt?
I was always the worst person on the worst team.
Oh, my God.
I was always in right field or occasionally left field when someone was sick, and I couldn't hit to save my life. So, yes, I appreciated this episode on all kinds of levels. Because I was Homer, essentially. So this is always one of my favorite episodes. I think it has a really big cast of guest stars, which is hard to manage, but I think they do it. They strike a great balance between overusing them, which would be, you know, you would lose the Simpsons in the episode, and underdoing them, which makes it so they're not even there. They're actually close to underdoing it, because with the exception of Strawberry, most of them don't even talk that much. You just kind of see their characters and see people talk about them. But I think they strike a really good balance. You still got a great Homer story. You get a little bit of Burns in there, which is always hilarious when Burns is being super old. And it has a great, you know, happy, emotional ending that Homer wins the big game, whether it's actually through any of his actions or not.
Yeah. It kind of comes back around to Homer being accidentally good at something.
Yeah.
Yep.
Winning despite himself. And that is that kind of everyman quality is why Homer is such a beloved character. I think that these particular episodes where he does succeed, it really brings it out, where you're like, he's not necessarily great at anything, but he just manages to eke out a victory somehow. It's going to be tough to rank, which we will do at the end of the show. We do have a submission for my favorite episode for this one, which I've been chomping at the bit to read. This is from Rob, aka Rattrap 007, a frequent contributor of trivia to the show. His response to why this is his favorite episode. I grew up and still live very close to Evansville, Indiana, which is Don Mattingly's hometown. As a kid in the 80s and early 90s, I always liked him. The fact he was in this episode was extra cool. I love Strawberry being a total kiss ass. Basically, with this episode, you get some good references, great jokes, fun guests, an all-around great episode. I even showed it to my parents a few months ago, and they enjoyed it, and they normally never like something like this. I got to pick out a few more episodes sometime to show them. I also love some of the background info on the making of the episodes, like Mattingly not having any problem with the Steinbrenner line or complaining why the others are doing things like hunting and he was doing the dishes. Or what about Griffey Jr. needing acting lessons from his dad and being led around by him, too? He could never get the quote-unquote party in my mouth line right. Dad had to show him. Yeah. Thank you, Rob, for that. Again, encourage you guys, as we get up to episodes, please send in your submissions, simpsonsshowpod@gmail.com. Next up, comments from the news group. A lot of complaints about and discussion arguments about softball rules, which we had mentioned here earlier. Apparently, a lot of the softball leagues, I guess, have their own house rules, have their own versions of things. Some people are saying, oh, a game couldn't end with a hit by pitch. Like a lot of people, because it's slow pitch softball, theoretically, they say that a hit by pitch would turn into a ball. And not it wouldn't be a automatic base, and so Homer could have won. But it's whatever. It doesn't. It's all. They have beer rules in the first game they play. I think we can let it slide. I also came across a long post by probably a crazy person, but he was writing a lot of suggestions for future episodes. He's like, I'm sure the Simpsons writers read this news group. Here's tons of ideas, and most of them are insane and terrible, but our next episode, Separate Vocations, he basically lays out the entire plot for a similar episode. So he didn't seem with it enough to know that it was the next episode. I think he just kind of stumbled onto that. It's really funny, but not a bunch else, because all these came during sweeps. Most of these episodes were so close together, they didn't have a lot of time to talk about stuff. You guys can check this out. This is the old news group, very early iteration of the internet, alt.tv.simpsons. It's on Google Groups. You can search it and find it. You can go back and dig into the archive if you'd like. Next up, our listener question of the week. This week, it is your favorite Maggie moment and why. A lot of great answers. A few of them, I'm always constantly surprised. First off, we have Amanda, drawn to insanity. Her answer, Maggie shooting Mr. Burns. She did not want to part with that candy. Cody at Commander Cody 83, pushing the boulder onto Russ Cargill in The Simpsons Movie. What superhuman strength? And then following that is Justin at Justin IFCIT, rescuing Homer from drowning in season 11, hashtag superhuman strength. So Maggie's inhuman ability, both dexterity and strength, is constantly mentioned. We have John at Chapel Style 311 giving Mr. Burns Bobo as if only to taunt him that one day she will almost be his undoing. hashtag 64 slices of American cheese. Sam, at flip side, going to have to go with a streetcar named Marge. Maggie organizing the babies and liberating the pacifiers was a feat. Let's see. Onto our Facebook. We have our buddies over at Friends of the Music podcast. I'm guessing it's Matt. Let's see. My favorite episode, Lee's on Ice, when Maggie saves Homer from a flying bottle. It gets me on so many levels. The obvious, it's hilarious. The superhuman, Maggie's ability to leap several body lengths in the air to catch the bottle is above of normal anything a normal baby is capable of. The surprising, it for some reason always catches me surprised, only adds to the hilarity. The timing, just doing it just as Homer is saying, Maggie, what has she ever done for anybody? The sullenness, the importance of her action, favorite. And finally, the Hitchcockian was my favorite part of this is that what doesn't happen. By that, I mean, say she didn't catch the bottle and hits Homer in the head. That thought absolutely cracks me up. And the even existential thought, how many times has Maggie saved Homer's life and we are not aware of? Let's see. We have Josh. And Papa's got a brand new badge. Maggie shoots Fat Tony and a couple of goons, hides the rifle under a mattress, and feigns being asleep. As Homer says, she's just like Clark Kent. When there's lots of excitement, she's nowhere to be found. Abby,
oh, that's great.
Whenever she scowls at the baby with one eyebrow, everyone has a nemesis. We have Saba. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing. Maggie's time in the Ayn Rand School for Tots and a streetcar named Marge. References of Steve McQueen in The Great Escape and Hitchcock's The Birds. Can't beat that. Our friend of the show, Izzy, my favorite is when Flanders is gone baptizing with a Simpsons kid. Maggie's creepy oakley doakley and her head spinning around backwards. And finally, I end with a heartfelt one. Sean, when she says daddy, so we all get older and have kids. We learn that is the most important sound from a little girl. Aw, sweet. Okay, Matt, what's your answer?
I got to go with the Ayn Rand School for Tots sequence because Maggie, as what is essentially Indiana Jones of the babies, is just fantastic. The music they have. I actually, when we were thinking about this question, I watched that scene again, and it is fantastic. I really can't wait for that episode, and that is a huge part of it.
What about you, Karen? What do you got?
I don't know, because my first thought isn't necessarily a Maggie moment more than a Homer moment, but it's do it for her.
That counts. I think we got several answers which was do it for her, and I would say that it Maggie's involved with it. It is a Maggie episode. I mean, it's about her.
Yeah.
So
So that's just hits you right in the heart. And but also, as I was talking about my favorite episodes and ranking them, number four is probably Streetcar. So the Ayn Rand School.
Yeah, that's
is a highlight.
Yeah, it's for sure. That's so good. Both and that is also that's my answer. Ayn Rand, the School for Tots, the Escape, and the I like the Escape. I like the Birds reference even more because babies are creepy. And
yes, they are.
And that's and the Birds. That Birds whole scene, shot for shot remake, is just perfect. It's great. So our next week's question is favorite guest appearance from an athlete. I figured this is as appropriate a time to bring that one out as any. I will post that question on all our social media. It's on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. We're on Twitter at SimpsonsShowPod. And you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com, as I have previously mentioned. Now it is time to end the show, the segment we end every show with. It is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is part of the show where Matt and I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. This was a good one, Matt.
It really was. Honestly, after watching several of the other episodes that I remember really fondly, like Radio Bart in this season, I was ready to be disappointed a little bit, but I was pleasantly surprised that this one actually held up to most of my memories. It does have a lot of the guest stars, which can kind of detract from the family, but in this case, it works pretty well. I'm looking somewhere around probably number 12, maybe 13.
That low? Really?
Well, you know, I was looking at each individual episode, and I thought, well, Saturdays of Thunder, probably better than this. Lisa's Pony, maybe.
Really? I definitely put this with Saturdays of Thunder.
You think so?
My thoughts was, my main concern was like, is it better than Lisa the Greek? That's where I was.
I don't think so. No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know.
I think this is a good episode, but having to shoehorn in all of the guest star stuff kind of loosens it up a little bit, whereas Lisa the Greek is very on point with the Lisa and Homer story. So,
I know, but
I can definitely see all, it a little further
all
up,
the but. Guest stars, all the craziness, like it really, now that that sways you, it has to, oh man. We're torn on this. We're going to have to fight about this one, Matt.
Uh-oh. All right.
I know, Kieran, you have already mentioned that's your second favorite episode.
Second favorite, but thinking about it, I always say there's a difference between favorite and best.
Yeah, that's where we try and separate that. We're like, because there's several on these that are we put lower that I really love, but they're not necessarily... Well, we try and make it as unbiased as possible, if that's, you know, as objective as possible, but it's hard.
If you're talking about, like, The Simpsons, Lisa the Greek is a great episode about Simpsons, like, family, like, yeah. Homer and Lisa, which is always a great combination.
Yeah.
So, in an objective list, I probably would put Lisa the Greek higher.
Lisa the Greek is currently number 6 on our list. With directly above it, we have Star Craving Dad, The Way We Was, Bart Gets an F, I Married Marge, and Lisa's Substitute is currently number 1.
That's a good list. What's below Lisa the Greek?
Bart the Murderer, Brush with Greatness, and Saturdays of Thunder, with Lisa's Pony currently at number 10.
Yeah, if it was me, and it's your show, but I'd say it'd go just under Lisa the Greek.
I know, but Matt here is, I gotta live with this guy.
Well, you know, you guys are bringing me around, I have to admit. I don't know, it's just Bart the Murderer and Brush with Greatness are so good.
I think this is better. It's definitely, I would go, like, my immediate thought is comparing it to other sports episodes. And so I think Saturdays and Thunder, like, this is better than Saturdays of Thunder. Saturdays of Thunder is not as, like, this gets directly to the soft, like Kieran had mentioned, this does, like, you say that it kind of wiggles around, but it generally is all about softball and about the softball team. It is not about other stuff. Saturdays of Thunder does meander a bit.
That is true. That is true.
And there's some, I love all the baseball players. I love baseball when this came out. I was collecting baseball cards for my dad when this episode first premiered. So I loved it at the time.
All right, out of respect for little baby Robbie, I can go as high as number 7, I think.
I was 7. I was not a baby.
That's a baby.
As high
I was
as number
2 when this came out.
You were 2? Okay. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, we
No, actually, did you say the 20th? Yeah, I was still 1.
Oh my god.
On the cusp.
My birthday is February 24th. I was nearly 2 when this episode came out.
Yeah, I was able to track back that I knew I started watching it live with which one was it, Matt? The one that had the Michael Jackson video with it. Was it Bart the Murderer?
I think so, yeah, because probably.
It was very recent. It was this season, because I remember watching the Michael Jackson video live, and then they never aired it in that version again. So, okay, you won't, but not above Lisa, you can't put it above Lisa the Greek?
I definitely cannot put it above Lisa the Greek.
Okay, I think I can agree with that. Lisa the Greek is really good, and I also have a lot of fondness for that episode as well. But, I mean, we're getting to the point where all of these are, I have fond memories of all these episodes. They're all great.
Yeah, as you get into like season 3, like late season 3, season 4, 5, 6, it's going to get tough.
Yeah, because I mean, I just read the top 10 to you, and these are all like really good episodes, and there's way more coming that are all really great too. So I'm glad though. We have been agreeing too much lately, man. I'm glad that we had to hash it out a little bit. So new number 7, Homer at the Bat. That makes Lisa's Substitute still number 1. Last place, Homer's Odyssey, now at number 52. Yes, you can find this list at our website, which is simply thesimpsonshow.com. Find everything there, links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, new episodes. You can download things there. Let's see, comment on the new episodes, contact us, and donate to the show. We'd obviously appreciate that. Let's see. Next week, Separate Vocations. I've already mentioned it. I'm looking forward to talk about that, or next week, I say. Next episode. I'm still not used to the fact that we do twice a week, Matt. I can't break it. Before we go, let's see. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Cheryl. It's MixmasterCereal. Please check out my comic book podcast. It is Handsome Boys Comics Hour and HandsomeBoysComicsHour.com. Kieran, where can people find you on the internet? What should they check out?
Well, the first plug will be for Journey to Misery, which is my regular like weekly podcast. I do it with my girlfriend, Helena, who's currently upstairs doing some work for university. The basic gist of it is we watched an episode of The Flash once, and she asked me, how many Flashes are there? And I just kind of went, well. And the conversation went from there. And as I was talking, I realized this, like, I was kind of live tweeting the conversation, and people seemed to enjoy Helena's reactions to stuff as I was tweeting it. So I said, oh, this could be a podcast. So we started Journey to Misery. We did the DC Multiverse to start, just to kind of establish what a multiverse is and what we mean when we say pre-crisis, post-crisis, New 52 and all that. We've done a series on The Flash, The Inhumans, Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Widow, the Shazam episode. That's the one I recommend. If you want to listen to one to see if you're going to like it or not, episode 10, Shazam, is my favourite one we've done. We're just about to finish Daredevil. We've got one more episode to do on Daredevil before that TV show comes out. Spider-Woman's coming up, Robin, Dick Grayson. We're going to do some Age of Ultron-related stuff, so Hawkeye, the Maximoff twins, Ultron himself. We're going to do some Secret Wars stuff, because Marvel's got their big Secret Wars stuff. So I have a lot of fun doing it. You can find it at kingimpulse.com. All the episodes are there. Go on iTunes. If you're listening to a podcast, you know how to find a podcast.
Yes. I heartily recommend it. I'm a subscriber. It's an excellent show. I even know a lot of the continuity, and it's still very entertaining.
Yeah, a lot of the responses we get are from people who know the continuity, and they just like hearing Helen's reactions. Especially, there's kind of a high and a low. Whenever there's like an animal, like when Lockjaw shows up for the first time, a lot of people have said that's their favorite moment. But then there's also lot like far too many children have died, considering we're on like episode 15. Like when I edit the podcast, I can see in like the waveform of the podcast where the deaths are.
I've yet to listen to Inhumans. We both, Matt and I, both have very fond feelings for the Inhumans, so I've been saving that one for a particularly rainy day.
So you can go to kingimpulse.com. That has all the Journey to Misery. It also has or 52, 53 episodes of Have a Nice Day, which is a wrestling podcast that I do sporadically, increasingly sporadically, unfortunately, whenever I get the time, where I talk to people about their personal histories with professional wrestling. So the first question is always, what's your earliest memory of pro wrestling? And then we kind of go from there. There's been other episodes that haven't followed that format. There's a really fun episode where me and Kyle Starks, who did Sex Castle, which came out the day of recording this and is an amazing graphic novel, we went through and watched a bunch of Scott Steiner matches and just kind of scratched our heads at the existence of Scott Steiner and just the evolution of Scott Steiner. Because I always think, how weird would it be if you got, and I apologize for no one watches wrestling, if you got like 1989, like clean cut college boy Scott Steiner and showed him 2015 Scott Steiner. That'd be crazy. That's crazy to us. So yeah, those are two podcasts to do. I'm at King Impulse on Twitter, kingimpulse.com. I write for What Culture, their WWE section, and I believe that is everything. If you like Journey to Misery, I have a Patreon, which helps us to do more fun stuff. Like, we're going to watch Howard the Duck, and Helena is terrified. She's scared of like puppets and like ventriloquist puppets and costumes like that. So she's really not looking forward to that. So I set the goal, if we get to $100, we're going to do an episode about that. So that's coming up very soon. I've gone on far too long. I'll hand it off back to you guys. At King Impulse is where you can find everything on Twitter.
No, it's fine. You've been very gracious appearing, so it does not bother me. I can talk about Howard the Duck for a long time. Matt, as before we go, as always, Matt does not participate in social media. You will not find him.
That's correct, but I'm currently on a tour of most of the spring training parks for the baseball teams in South Florida to fix every single radar gun, because they apparently all broke. So if you see a guy fiddling with a radar gun during a spring training game, it's probably me.
And that is not a joke, guys. that's not a joke. That's serious. But with that, we can call it a day. I am Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.
Well, Mr. Burns had done it. The power plant had won it, with Roger Clemens clucking all the while. Mike Socia's tragic illness made us smile. While Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile, we're talking softball. From Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw. We're talking softball. From Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw.